Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick, Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law you watch me cover on television every day into the more fun world, some would argue, of theater and the arts. And joining me today, this is great because, oh, actually, now that I think about it, it involves politics too. With this guest, I think he'll agree. We'll find out. Claiborne Elder joins me, and because he's coming to Chicago to put on a cabaret act, even though you might know him from this other little tiny show called Gilded Age, which I'm addicted to. Please tell Carrie Coon I said hi. Hi, Clay.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So don't you agree, since you also play John Adams, that makes this a political interview?
Yes. All right. Yes, that does make this a political interview. Yes. My family, I was like, political? Oh, what's that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's because of John Adams, you know? By the way, I hope we can talk a little bit about Gilded Age, because I'm just a huge fan of that. And of course, Carrie Coon is primarily from Chicago. I've interviewed her before, and she's married to somebody of no importance named Tracy Letts. And
just somebody. Yeah, some guy.
Some guy who wrote a play or two.
Uh-huh. Something.
But anyway, so I think, am I right? I think people might be, because we live in such a, in my view, a television world, the people who tie you to Gilded Age, where you play John Adams, might they be surprised to know you have this huge Broadway career? Or do you find that, no, most people really know about the Broadway career, and maybe they're surprised to find out you also have this television thing going?
You know, there is a little bit of both. In the Gilded Age, because Gilded Age is full of theater people, I think that a lot of people assume that other people on the Gilded Age also have theater credits. So I think that there is, like, I think people have an inkling. I don't think they're surprised necessarily, but yeah, so I think they sort of know, but might, even if they don't know exactly what I did.
But by the way, of course, coming to Chicago and getting your cabaret show, I think is more akin to the Broadway side of you and the performance side. So let's talk a little bit about that background, because my goodness, I'll be honest. I mean, I know you and stuff and know of you, but I didn't know all the awards you've been up for and just, even all the incredible shows that you've done. I knew about several, like Sunday in the Park with George, where, by the way, not only were you in it, but you understudied Jake for the lead. How many times were you ever able to, trip him or slip something in his coffee or something, make sure you went on?
You know, Jake Gyllenhaal is like the best person to understudy because he has no ego about it. He's like, follow me around, let's hang out, which is so nice. Luckily, I never went on, because it would have been
you played the role before, so it's not like you don't.
I played the role a bunch of times, and I sang part of the role at the Hollywood Bowl, and I feel like I got to have a moment with that show. But when you're covering a huge star like that, when they announce that that person is out and that you're on, everyone is just disappointed. And you have to convince them all to like you, and they're not going to like you because they're going to be mad they paid $250 to not see Jake Gyllenhaal. So I never went on, thankfully, though I would have loved to, but it would have also been hard.
I get that. But you're a name too. So it's not as though,
thank you.
It's not as though we're tripping up the audience, but I certainly get your point. If I was going to see Tom Cruise and they, said instead we have Carol Channing, it just might throw me off.
It would be very different. Although I would love that. Oh, I'd be so excited.
Yeah, when you think of it's not bad. I interviewed Carol once.
That would
actually
be a great trade.
And she sang for me. She sang a song I think she made up. It was towards the end.
Wow.
I'll tell you about that when I see you in person. She'd just gotten remarried and, married, I should say, to Harry, her husband. They both were on, and they wanted to talk about education, all sorts of fun things.
Oh, my gosh.
But a little bit about your background, because you're a Utah boy. Although somehow growing up, it was a lot to talk about there, I'm sure, but also you took this little stint. Was this part of maybe, I assume you remember the Mormon church?
I grew up, not anymore, but I was when I was a child. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you kind of have to be. Then they shipped you off to Russia. What was that Russian training all about?
I got a scholarship to go and study at this acting school in Russia. And so I spent a little under a year there studying, which was really incredible and was kind of, that's still the basis of the training that I lean on as an actor.
And by the way, did you do a mission? Was that, were you part of the, of that through your mission part?
I didn't do a mission. I came out and left the church when I was younger. So I performed with the church a little bit, like as a performance missionary. So I wore the name tags, but I didn't have to go to the temple, and I didn't like go knock on people's doors. So it wasn't the mission that you're thinking of when you think of the characters in the Book of Mormon. I didn't really do that.
Yeah. And when you say the Book of Mormon, I'm not talking about the book. I'm talking about the musical.
No, the musical. Yeah. For
so,
sure.
The course, musical. I'd like to think I'm the first person to ask you this. I'm probably not. I don't think you've ever been in that show. I didn't see it anywhere on your resume, but would you do it?
So here's my sad Book of Mormon story. I was working on a show and they were putting together a workshop of Book of Mormon, and nobody knew anything about it. They didn't really have a script written. They just were getting a bunch of guys together to like improvise and play and write. And it was at the time it was like, oh, the South Park guys are writing a Book of Mormon musical. It's who knows if it's going to be good or not.
Right.
And they asked me to be in this workshop. And I said, no, I was like, you know, my family would just never forgive me if I, you know, if I was in
this
thing.
You know what role? Was it Elder Pride? Was it Andrew Rannells or Josh Gad?
No, I don't even know that they had roles. I think they were just like, that's how they were just like getting together in a room to start singing through some ideas and things. And I said, no. And I know people who did that workshop who have now gone in to make a lot of money because they all got a producer point on that, from that workshop. And you know what? Like, yes, could I go back in time? I probably would do it. But also, like, I don't have regrets about it because I would still make the same decision today. It would have been really hard for my family if I had done that.
Yeah.
So that's my sad Book of Mormon story. So no, I've never done it. And now I've sort of like, I'm like, oh, well, now I don't need to do it. If I did never do it in the beginning.
Gotcha. Well, that's, you know, Andrew Rannells did. He was all right. You know,
he was all right. Yeah. No, I don't know that it would have been for, I would have been for his role, but.
I think so. And, I used to do a Broadway TV show here, a backstage Broadway show. And so I had the boys from South Park and the whole Nick, at that time it was Nick Rouleau, Ben Platt, right? Those were the guys who were taking up the Nationals, but it was before he was Ben Platt, when he was doing that, which was a good way to know him, and meet him. But the thing is, I'm sort of curious. So we had this discussion then, but what I came to learn, I'm sure it's because you grew up in Utah or at least were there. I was amazed to find out just that the Mormon Church actually was not offended by it. They sort of used it as a marketing tool. I mean, they were smart enough to sort of say, and I remember the program sort of saying, you've seen the musical, now read the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think they were really smart in the way, and they posted missionaries like outside sometimes. I mean, I don't think they were thrilled about it, but I do think instead of getting offended by it, they just decided to not be offended by it. I mean, it is I would say among Mormons, seen as being something that is very, very bad.
Okay.
But the Mormon Church, instead of getting super offended, was like, sure.
My last Utah question, then we come modern day. I had a crush on Donny Osmond growing up. Did you have a crush on Donny Osmond growing up did you want to be an Osmond?
Yes. And I went to school with Donny Osmond's kids. So they were like, his son was like in the school plays with me. So Donny would come and see the show. It's like saw my high school musicals, which was always very funny.
Wow. Yes. And he comes to WGN a lot whenever he's in town. He loves.
Oh, really?
He even just did a little post when he was talking about the memories of his last tour that he's just done. And WGN was his story because we're kind of goofy. And so he loves coming in and they play with him and they do all sorts of fun stuff. So you're kind of in Donnie's home right now.
Oh, amazing. That I should be so lucky.
One would argue. But let's get back to you in more modern day because a variety of, I mean, not just Broadway shows. I mean, you've toured, you've done some other things, but Bonnie and Clyde. And so was that put you in the Jeremy Jordan world?
Yes. Yeah. I was in the original company of that show and we worked on it for like 3 years before it came to Broadway. So me and Jeremy and Laura Osnes and Melissa, who played my wife, the four of us were with the show for such a long time. We spent Christmas and Thanksgiving together for a number of years because we were out of town doing the show during that time. And we got very close. Jeremy asked me to be in his wedding, though I couldn't do it because I was in a show. That's how it always goes. But, yeah, we all got very close. Even though the show didn't run very long on Broadway, we had worked together for so long on it that,
it was kind of fun. So have you wanted to follow Jeremy, like by going into Great Gatsby now? And, you know, are we going to see you there?
No, but maybe, I don't know. No, probably not.
I'm just asking.
I know.
And
but I would.
you may or may not know, WGN is owned by Nextstar, and Nextstar just bought the CW. So our nighttime world now, we shift from WGN, and the CW takes us over in kind of those primetime hours, which is not a big deal, except it kills one of the replays of my show because of that. But you were, of course, in one of the finest of CW shows, which was The Carey Diaries.
Yes, I was.
And any good memories of that one? Kind of a freaky show to be part of.
Oh my gosh, it was so fun in that we all loved each other, and we knew it was. I was on the second season, and they all knew it was the last season, so we got to really just enjoy the time we were there together. And I mean, like, some of those people I'm still good friends with. I really loved working with them. But you know, it was my first TV show, so I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, where do I, you know? And I was like 28 and playing a 19-year-old, and it was a lot of fun.
They should have put you in Dawson's Creek too. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Oh geez, yeah.
You can see our age difference, because I'm remembering all the things when you went. you were probably with, you know, Dawson's kids in school or something like that. This, you've got this sort of dichotomy going on of television and theater, and I don't match your Broadway credentials, but I've done theater and done stage, and I find I'm more comfortable in front of a TV camera than I'm fine in front of a stage, but I dropped some lines once whenever, and I freaked out. And that happened to Donny Osmond, by the way. And I had to talk about that with Donny, who said, get back on the horse, but I've not been able to. Which world do you prefer? Are you sort of, is it like, put me on Broadway, or nah, give me the TV show. I'm good with that. Gilded Age.
You know, there is nothing that beats being in front of an audience to me. Like, I just love live theater. And partially, you know, when I, my last Broadway show I was in ended 2.5 years ago. It was Company.
Yeah.
And when it ended, I said, you know, I have a 7-year-old son, and I was like, I need a break, because I'd missed bedtime for a year. And I was like, I need to just take a break from theater and be at home and just do the Gilded Age and do some other TV things and just take a little pause, you know, to be a dad. And I started touring this show around, thinking I would just sort of do it a couple of times, that it was a fun way to stay in front of an audience. And then it just kind of, word got out about it, and it kept getting booked more and more places. And now I've been touring it around for a year and a half, just 2 or 3 times a month. But it has been, it's so much fun to just have me in an audience for an hour and a half to play and talk and have an experience together. And it has grown into being my favorite thing to do, and I love it so much.
Well, let's talk about Company then a little bit, if we can, where you played Andy. Now, by the way, I have kissed Patti LuPone in a piano bar in Paris after she sang Don't Cry for Me Argentina directly to me. Can you match the story?
Oh my gosh, geez. Yes, I helped Patti LuPone pick out all of the appliances for her kitchen.
Oh, you have beat my story.
Which was written, no, it's just a weird story. It's just a weird, like, she asked me to go, we went to like a, you know, a big fancy furnishing store in Manhattan and walked around and picked out appliances together. I love her so much.
Now, understanding in New York, like, apparently people don't really like, did she have a lot of people bothering her, or is it New York? Apparently, like, there's a celebrity in every corner, so nobody cares. But
yeah, I mean, around the theater district, I think she wears a hat and sunglasses, and she gets in a car fast, and, you know, so people don't stop her. But yeah, I mean, in the rest of Manhattan, it is like, you know, there are more famous people than anybody walking around. You know, it's that kind of thing where it's like they are around.
Patty is going to be here, by the way, October 4th. She's appearing at the Lyric Opera One Night Gala. I shall be front row center seeing her.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
And we'll remind her. Hopefully she'll look at me and say, weren't you the guy that kissed me in the piano bar?
I know you. Yeah.
Yeah, I know you. but anyway, so just some memories of doing that. First of all, of course, Stephen Sondheim passed away just as that was opening. So did you have interaction with him prior to his death?
Yes, he gave me my first job ever when I was 24. I moved to New York and I started just going to open chorus calls. And after about a year, I went to the open chorus call for Roadshow, which was his kind of second to last musical at the Public Theater.
It started here in Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like at the open chorus audition, you know, and they kept calling me back. And I ended up getting the part Gavin Creel played in Chicago.
Ah, yeah.
And, And they took a real risk on me, Steve and John Doyle. But then because of that, Steve was like a big, he was around a lot of my career, just as far as like I've ended up doing a lot of his shows in New York and otherwise. And so I've gotten to work with him several times, which was really lovely. And I tell stories about that in my show and about during the pandemic. He was like, I have a house upstate, and it was like an hour from his house in Connecticut. And he was like, will you come out and visit us? So me and my husband and my son started going out to visit them and had a really lovely time getting to know him in the last year of his life in a different way, like in a much, in a more intimate way. And the week before he passed away, we were up at his house hanging out. And when we got the news, we had a matinee performance of the show, and the director and producers were standing in the wings right when we got off stage. They're like, go back out on stage. And Steve hated opening nights. He loved first preview, but he hated opening nights. So he was there on our first preview, which was really lovely. And then they told us after the matinee that he had passed away that the night before. And the New York Times held the story so that we didn't have to read it on our phones between shows. Really? Yeah, they waited for us. They waited for the director to tell us so that we could just have that.
So since you were with him a week before, did you know he was very ill, or did it come as, was it a surprise?
He wasn't really that ill. You know, like it was sort of, I mean, he was ill in the fact that he was an old man, you know. It was not a surprise in that sense, but it was sudden. You know, it wasn't like a slow decline. So
in working, you know, I interviewed last week Raul Esparza both for this show, but also on stage where he received an honor, and we did an interview in front of the crowd. One of my questions was, amazing, what don't we know about Stephen Sondheim? And of course, there's so many stories. I mean, Greg Edelman's a friend of mine. We grew up, and there's so many people who have worked with Sondheim who have these freak out stories. Like when he's watching you, you can't deal with it. Just for Ansel Elgort from West Side Story has a story about what Sondheim said to him, which I'll tell you in person. I can't say it here because of the words it involves, but he freaked people out. And Raul said, yes, he freaked you out. It scared you, but he was the warmest guy you ever known. So what was your take on him?
That is absolutely true. You know, I tell this story in my show, but my first real experience with him was we were working on Roadshow, and there was a song in the show that I sang that was really high for me. And so I was very nervous about being able to do it well. And I talked to Steve and I was like, do you think we could bring it down? And he was like, why would you bring it down? You can sing it. I've heard you sung it every day. And I'm like, I'm just nervous about it. I'm nervous about being able to do it every day. He was like, yeah, fine, let's bring it down. So we brought it down a whole step. And then over the course of the next couple of weeks, without telling me, he started having it printed in a half a step higher key and slipping it to the music director. And so we were gradually, over the course of the next couple of weeks, like we'd be running the show and they would get to that song and I would just do it. And I was I was just a nervous young kid. So I didn't really notice until one day it had gotten above where he'd written it. And I was like, I'm sorry. Can we stop for a second? And Steve was in the corner of the room and he just stood up and pointed at me and threw his head back and laughed and laughed and laughed and was like, I knew you could do it. And so we took it back to where the key he had written it in. But that was him. I mean, like he was playful and he was funny and he was scary and that he's a genius. And also, you know, I think that for me, the thing he taught me the most was if you have confidence in your performance, that's all that really matters, is you have to believe in yourself and what you're doing. And then all of us will come along with you.
That was kind of the story with Ansel Elgort, where when Ansel met him, it was on an elevator and he had just done a rehearsal, and Ansel said, I'm just so in awe of you. And I can't tell you. And Sondheim said something to him like, you need to have confidence. You need to do this and this. And Ansel said, okay, but I just want you to know how amazing this is to be with you. And it was Sondheim's response to that was, did you hear what the, I said, that's what I mean by kind of the freak out part. Before
that sounds right.
Yeah. But before Roadshow was Roadshow, it was called Bounce. And it started here in Chicago at the Goodman Theater with Richard Kind and others. And it was a total flop. And so the first time I met Sondheim, I think one of the first times I met Sondheim, it was at Ravinia. They used to do a tribute to him every year.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I went up to him and to said hi and whatever. And he saw I had something in my hand. He goes, you know, I don't really want to sign anything. And I went, okay, Stephen. I said, but when Bounce opened here, Richard Kind, there's a scene where he takes a bunch of stock certificates and throws them up in the air, right? You'd know that. And one of them landed in my lap because I was sitting in the front row. One of them landed in my lap and he looked at me and he went, "That I'll sign."
So, that's amazing. Yeah, oh, that's cool.
Wasn't that cool?
That's
and
very
last
cool.
Thing, let's hope nobody's watching. But like, if I stayed at Sondheim's house, I would need to take something. So like, did you steal? Like, Kay Ballard was a friend of mine and I used to, like, I took a washcloth, you know? Uh-huh. It's like, I've got to have something. Did you? But I collect things. What did you?
I did not take anything. Although, you know, like, I stayed in their guest room once where he kept, where like all the awards were. And I was like, it was so weird to just be among the Grammys and the Tonys and the Oscars and the whatevers. I mean,
He wouldn't miss one Tony if you think about it.
I know. Slip it in my bag. Put a Sharpie, like Sharpie my name over the top.
Yeah. Oh, no, I would probably just keep it as him. I mean, why not? You can keep it as a Sondheim thing. It's just, you know. But see, this would be the time now that we've lost it, but you could tell me now the truth. So that's why I'm asked.
Yes. No, I do have, you know, he used to send telegrams, which I really, he would send telegrams on opening night to me sometimes, which was really fun to get
an actual telegram.
Yeah. I mean, they come in FedEx, like packing things now, but the telegram itself looks like an olden timey telegram. It was really fun.
Oh, I love that. That's wild. Yeah. So let's talk about your cabaret, which you're going to be doing in Chicago. I wanted to kind of give people that sense of you, since they may only know you from the screen or from the stage or something. I want a little bit about your background. You're going to be here on October 18th and 19th, Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. and then Sunday at 5 p.m. They always have that little Sunday show at 5 p.m. So I'm guessing, I'm hoping that even some of the stories you're sharing with me, I mean, is it a life of Claiborne Elder that we're going to get in that show, or just a series of songs and we're not going to learn any of this unless we watch it here?
No. It is a cross between a stand-up show and a cabaret. I would say there's probably more talking than in a cabaret, and there's more singing than in a stand-up show. And so it's sort of halfway between those things. And it's not in the sense that it is not like a stand-up show usually isn't like, this is the story of my life. I was born and blah, blah, you know. I talk about my life, but it's more thematic in the sense of I speak a lot about universal things, and then I speak about bits of my career, bits of my life, things like that. And I'm excited to be in Chicago because my husband lived in Chicago for 15 years. He started the About Face Theater company.
Well, I know Eric. In fact, tell Eric I said hi.
I will.
I worked with About Face Theater, certainly in the early days, and people like Ben Sprunger and all sorts of people that we crossed paths with. Yeah.
We saw Ben a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
You were in Atlanta then?
No, he was in Provincetown.
No, right. He did. He did.
Yeah. So I'm excited to, because we have so many friends there from visiting, you know, that I'm excited. It feels like not like a home to me because I never lived there, but just there's so many friendly faces that I know that I'm
well, Eric's world. I mean, yeah, his world was huge here. So, I mean, there's no, and by the way, I'm sure, you know, and he knows About Face is still going strong.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. We've gone back for anniversaries and things a couple of times, which has been really fun.
So while you're here, then it sounds like maybe you'll do an extended stay. Is it going to be seeing friends? Is it going to be going to the Steppenwolf and seeing Noises Off, or the Goodman and seeing what, and seeing, why am I drawing a blank with hair? Hello. Inherit the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
Open Monday night, with Harry Lennox. We got some good stuff for you to be seeing here. And that doesn't even include Harry Potter.
Oh yeah. No, we have to make some plans. It has been a busy summer and we haven't made plans entirely about how long we're going to stay and what we're going to see, but we need to, because.
Will Eric come to the shows with you? Will I be seeing him there, or just.
He's going to come. Yeah. He's going to come. I don't know which ones. He has seen the show many, many times, bless his heart. But he always loves coming, so he'll come. And especially in Chicago, he's, of course, coming. But I don't know what performance he's going to come to, but he'll be there.
Yeah. So hopefully Saturday night. And by the way, I'm assuming you have not seen – you might have been to the Mercury Theater maybe over the years. Have you been in this space?
I haven't ever been to this space. Eric had been and told me about it, but I haven't been inside. And I'm excited that they have such an amazing lineup of people this season coming out for this.
Yeah, I work with, really talk exciting. With, and I usually interview most of them before they get there. Jay Rodriguez earlier. So it's a really intimate space. And you'll have this sense of the audience who's with you, which it's, I mean, it's not 54 below. It's not that large or anything like that, but I mean, you like it.
Okay. I think I'm really excited. Connect.
Who will accompany you on stage? You a music director or?
Yes, I travel around with my music director, Rodney Bush. He plays all the shows with me. I couldn't do it without him. We developed the show together, and he is a big part of the show. And we just know each other so well from doing it so many times. I can't imagine doing it without him, because we make little changes or little moves in it that I couldn't, you know. He sings backup on a couple of songs with me too, and so. I love it.
Yeah. Well, maybe Eric can too if he's. I'll get up. Let's all sing. Just bring the lyrics. So will the music that we get, the songs that we get, will they be sort of a visiting of the shows you've been in, like Company and all of that? Or is it, it's not connected to that? You're just doing songs you want to do.
It's sort of all over the place. There are definitely songs from shows that I've been in, but then there are also pop songs. And
can you share a couple? We're just whetting people's appetites.
Yeah. I sing, I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston song. I sing a slow, like sad version of that. I sing Finishing the Hat from Sunday in the Park with George. I sing How Glory Goes from Floyd Collins. And then I sing like some original song that was sort of written by some friends of mine, and a lullaby that I sing to my son every night. So it's a little all over the place.
So I get the flavor. Then we get the kind of family flavor. And do you talk about, you know, it's known as the gay cabaret, and all the performers are gay into it. So I want to just ask you a little bit about that. In terms of your career, you're out, you're open. Nothing seems to be getting in the way of your career. But, you know, you talk to certain celebrities, people who I do, and they give a sense of saying it's not as open as you think it might be. So what is life like being, especially an open and out performer?
Yeah, you know, that is true. I think that people are like, no, it's all okay now. Everybody can do everything. And then they have they'll give like, one example of like Matt Bomer in one thing, you know, and you're like,
right. Yeah, that's Jonathan Bailey. He made it in the fellow travel.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and also they're like, I think there is sort of an unfortunate history of actors becoming successful and then coming out. And that is a different trajectory than a person that started as an out actor, you know. But I remember, you know, I'm not that old. I'm not that young, but not that long ago, my first manager said to me, you know, I was doing a show and it was kind of a big, I was doing a lot of interviews and stuff for it. And he was like, don't ever mention that you're gay in these interviews. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, you need to not talk about it. Huh. And I was like, that's sort of a non-starter. I'm not going to not talk about it. And
I'm just sort of curious, was it a, you need to lie or just avoid the topic?
He said, if they ask anything, just say, I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, wow.
We can talk about something else if you'd like to. That was what he told me to say. And I was just like, I don't know. It was disappointing. And I wasn't with that manager for very long, because that was sort of the deal with a lot of the things they were doing. But, you know, now it is like, I don't know. I get called in for a broad spectrum of things, but I get called in a lot for gay characters. And I think that that's great. And I don't, you know, I don't think only gay people have to play gay characters. I think that, you know, I think that there is a life experience that comes from being gay that helps to understand a gay character better, and that maybe that's necessary. But I, you know, I do think there have been times in which, you know, I won't name shows, but I did a bunch of workshops of a show not that long ago as the leading kind of male. And I mean, long enough ago, it was like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when the show went to Broadway, the feedback was, well, we can't have a gay guy playing the romantic lead. That was the like candid feedback. And I was like, well, great. What am I going to do about that? So, you know, I think that we are becoming more open. I think casting directors are opening their perceptions about what a person can do, but it is not just like a free for all now. Everything's fine. Yeah. You know?
You know, it's you're triggering another recent interview I did with Lawrence Luckinbill. You know Larry Luckinbill, who's here and his husband, right? And just wrote a fantastic autobiography. But he talks about Boys in the Band and talks about the fact that when they decided to make it into a movie, that the producers were like, "But you can't have gay people in this film." And that's to which they did, because the author, but people were like, "I'm out of here if we don't do it." So it looks like you kind of have to stand your ground in all of that. But do you find, so in your cabaret show, which is really do we get some of that? I mean, is there a bit of a, you know, let me share that part of my life with you, with, I assume, with pride, and you're talking to an audience that's open and accepting in Chicago, so they're certainly going to be fine with it.
Yeah. Oh, it's filthy. don't get me wrong. I mean, sort of the whole premise of my show is that you look at me and I'm this like nice gay ex-Mormon dad, and you're like, oh, what a nice guy. But actually, I'm really dark and kind of effed up. And so I really show those sides. I tell some like dark, funny gay stories. And I think
language warning.
Oh, sorry, say that again.
Do we have a language warning for audience members?
I don't think you need a language warning, but I will just say, if you think that, don't bring your kids to this.
Okay.
They should be 16 or 17.
I couldn't get through my, I interviewed Leah Delaria, and my poor producer spent 3 hours trying to, can you imagine, right?
Oh my gosh. Closing night of Company, we had like a little gathering afterwards, and I was so sad the show was closing. And I walked out onto the street with my husband, and we were like going back to the car, and I was like, oh my God, it's over. I'm so sad. And I ran into Leah Delaria, who I don't know. And she was like, you're that guy from Company. And she grabbed my shoulders and she like told me how funny she thought I was and how good in the most lovely, generous way. And I have these pictures. My husband snapped some photos of her doing it. And it was like, it was such a meaningful thing. She was so lovely and open and generous. And on my last moments of enjoying Company, it was really moving to me. So I love her.
I love it. Have you seen companies like guys like Matt Roden, who are now on the road with it and doing just a phenomenal job?
No, I haven't gotten to see it. I really wish I could.
All right. I also think you need to be in Into the Woods.
Oh, I would die. Anything. I'll play anything in Into the Woods.
Well, it's the Gavin Creel role that that kind of comes into my head, right? I don't want to typecast you.
No, I want to do it so badly. Oh my gosh. I've played the prince. I've played Cinderella's prince once before, and it was so fun. It's so fun.
Weren't you in Beauty and the Beast?
Yes, I was at Muni, at the Muni in St. Louis last summer. Yeah.
I love it. So, so when you do this, is this kind of a summer break? How does it fit in with like Gilded Age? I mean, is that what you're doing now? How does it fill in with the filming of all that? Oh, I also have to ask, because the sets are so amazing. Is Gilded Age, isn't it filmed in New York and not LA? And are you in actual mansions or are those sound stages?
Both. We have sound stages, but a lot of the interiors are in historic homes and mansions and places all over around New York City. But it's
so
all
the party scenes and all of that, you're actually in a mansion somewhere usually?
Sometimes, yeah. Okay. Usually. Like the main entranceway, most of the ballrooms and things, those are in Newport, Rhode Island. We shoot a lot in Newport because there are all these amazing historic homes there that are museums. And so they open them up to us, and it's so fun. And the Breakers and stuff like that. It's really amazing.
Will you give us some strong, because you're going to have Gilded Age fans in the audience. It just comes with the territory. So we'll be hearing a little of that as well.
Yes, but I can't tell you anything about season 3, but I can tell you stories about shooting season 2. We're still in the middle of shooting season 3 right now. And I just took a break to go do a movie, but then I fit these tour dates in whenever I can, whenever I have room in my schedule, because I love it so much.
What a great, you've got a good life.
It's not bad, knock on the things. I'm not incredibly famous or filthy rich, but I'm working and happy, and I've been very lucky.
Well, famous enough and hopefully rich enough. And by the way, where did you and Eric meet?
We met working. He had been hired to go to Kansas City, Missouri to run a theater company there. And I got hired to play Cinderella's prince in Moises Kaufman's version of Into the Woods that he was trying to bring to New York. And it was such a cool production. I wish it had happened in New York. But so we met there and we became good friends. And then like the last week I was there, I asked him out on a date and we were like, this is crazy. We don't even live in the same city. How will we ever make this work? And that was 15 years ago.
And you did. And then you had a kid. Mm-hmm. Is it 9 now?
He's 7. He just turned 7. Yeah.
So it's like, it's just what the American dream is supposed to be.
Yeah. It's been good.
I love it. By the way, did you see, I interviewed Moises for, I think it was Paradise Alley. Directed recently. Did you see that show? Didn't have a long run on Broadway, but.
No, I did a workshop of that show in Toronto.
Really?
And I showed up. I had like my son came with me when he was just a baby. They flew us up, put us up there for 2.5 weeks to do a workshop. And when we got there, they were like,
The book writer, the first day of rehearsal, they were like, hey, everybody, the book writer has left the show. They're rewriting the book. And then they've talked to me and they're like, Clay, we're not sure your character's in the show anymore. But you're here. So I spent 2 weeks just like hanging out in Toronto playing a character.
Or we're going to kill you in the war early on. One of those.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, so I got to work with a lot of the people that were on it. But
What an amazing cast. I loved working on that show or interviewing people. Before I lose you, I want to remind people you are at the Venus Cabaret October 18th and 19th at 8 p.m. That's a Friday and a Saturday. Sunday, the 20th at 3 p.m. Tickets at mercurytheaterchicago.com. Hopefully you'll get to meet all the folks who run that, Walter Stearns and all the people who are involved at Mercury Theater Chicago. You're a joy to talk to. And my guess is I wanted people to get a good sense of you, because why would we not want to come see you do your thing on stage? I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. I'm so
break
excited.
Legs, as we say. Again, my warm regards to your husband, and who I haven't seen in a while, but hopefully he'll remember. And I look forward to seeing you here in Chicago.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Clayborne Elder, mercurytheaterchicago.com, October 18th, 19th, and 20th. Check it out. Thank you. Appreciate it. Stay safe in New York.
Thank you.